This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast returns. Matt Larkin, Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy.
Yeah.
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Did you guys check out the Super Bowl by any chance?
Don't say anything about it. Don't say anything about it. I haven't watched it, and I'm not going to watch it for another week and a half. I PVR'd it, and I didn't care enough to watch it when it was on, but I really, really care about it, so you can't say anything, okay?
Funny thing is, Ken just murders that joke, which wasn't even that good to begin with. Our boss, actually, Jason,
I'm
does
I'm killing
do
it
this.
On that joke. You're absolutely right. Just, I'm killing just, it on that joke.
Just burying it in the ground. But our boss, Jason, actually did do that with a curling tournament where we're not allowed to tell him because it was on the weekend and he still hasn't
They're
watched it.
They're called Bonspiels.
Bonspiels. Oh,
you know what it was, too? You know what it was, too? It's like the Scotties Tournament of Hearts.
Yeah, I don't know what
it's
that
a big
is.
One.
And he's like in the meeting, he's going, don't say anything about who won. Yeah, I think we're okay on that.
Yeah,
I think we're all right. I think we're all right.
It's already slipped.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Mind.
I think we're good.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Looking around the league now, we're in the home stretch and the standings are starting to matter for a lot of teams. I mean, every team, but you know, the teams that are on the bubble in particular. One of those teams is the New York Islanders. They're tied for the 8th and final playoff spot in the East in that crazy Metro division.
Technically, they're on the outside looking in right now.
Yes, they're tied because of their ROW stat,
right?
But they're tied in points. And we've had a lot of questions, I know, on Twitter, things like that, from Islanders fans wondering, you know, well, A, will Garcinoe get fired? But B, what do you do? Do you start thinking about a John Tavares trade because he's a pending UFA? Or do you do the opposite and start thinking, okay, how do we show Tavares that we still want to win? And what upgrades should we be making, if any? Which way do you guys lean on that debate?
Well, I'm not sure the Tavares thing trade is I think they're two very separate issues. The first one is, you know, do you bolster your lineup to show John Tavares that you're a contender? I think the problem with the New York Islanders is they're a fundamentally flawed team. With or without John Tavares, with or without trade deadline acquisitions, they're a fundamentally flawed team. They give up 35 shots a game. Their goaltending is subpar, to say the least, by NHL standards. Their defense, I mean, you know, I know that Johnny Boychuk and Colin DeHaan are hurt, and that's a huge, huge hole to blow in your defense core, but they're defensively, as a team and as a defense core, they're really, really leaky. I'm just not sure that there's any moves you can, like quick fix kind of moves you can make at the deadline that really address those core problems. So now you're left with, okay, well, we are what we are, and we're either going to just make the playoffs in a really lousy Eastern Conference, or we're going to be out. Mm-hmm. So then you figure that out. Okay, so then now do you trade Tavares? You know, if you know you're not going to re-sign him. And I think the problem is they don't know whether they're going to re-sign him or not. This is going to, every indication I'm getting, I spoke to John Tavares when they were in, and I spoke to some people very close to him when he was in Toronto last week. And the impression I'm getting is he's going to take this right to the end. And I would not be surprised if it's a Steven Stamkos situation where he gets wooed by a couple of teams. And he is going to, you know, he's earned the right to make this decision. He's going to take the time to make that decision. And, I mean, if you trade him at the deadline, in all likelihood, there's absolutely no chance he's coming back.
Right, because then you give him a taste for
another
team.
Yeah, you give him a taste of somewhere else.
He might his appetite.
You know, like how often would a guy come back and sign? It's not going to happen. So I think what you do is you stay status quo, both with your lineup and with John Tavares. You kind of hope you get in. And then, like, the thing with the Islanders is right now, they've made it clear they want him back. They're willing to give him the term and the money that he wants to come back. And now it's up to him. And I think he's just going to take it right to the end.
Yeah, I think you basically, maybe you kind of have a meeting with Tavares and say, like, this is our plan. We are going to do nothing for the rest of, you know, for the deadline. We're going to let our UFAs go off in the wind this summer. So Nikolai Kuhlman gone, Dennis Seidenberg gone, Yaroslav Halak gone. For the post deadline time, I think what you try to do is you get as much time possible for kids like Sebastian Aho, the other one, Ryan Pulock, you know, you give Josh Hosang one last chance. You know, you see what Michael Dalcol can do on, like, a regular basis. Because when you go into the summer, the Islanders, they do have a good amount of draft picks to play with because of the Travis Hamonic trade with Calgary.
Right.
So they have extra picks. They definitely need a goaltender, no doubt about that. I mean, is Jonathan Bernier the answer?
Yeah. Jonathan Band-Aid.
Yeah, Peter Mrazek, who knows? You know, free agency is always kind of, it's a Carter Hutton. You know, you get into these Scott Darling situations, and I would be very nervous if I'm an Isles fan. But, you know, you have assets to play with where you could bring in a number one goaltender, whether it's more likely by trade if you're going to get somebody that you're very confident in. But I think you just need to let this string play out because, if you make the playoffs, you probably lose to Tampa in the first round. If you miss the playoffs by a point, then whatever. Like, you know, so you missed a couple of home playoff dates. I think you just sort of, you say to Tavares, like, look, we got a great first line now with Josh Bailey and Anders Lee. You know, Matt Barzal is a star in the making.
Yeah, Anthony Beauvillier is coming on.
Beauvillier is coming on. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Kiefer Bellows on the way.
Yeah, you make that pitch to Tavares that it's like, we're in a better situation now than we have been in years. Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the thing, Ryan. I mean, John Tavares is going to make his decision when he looks at this organization. I believe John Tavares' decision is going to come down to one thing. It's not going to come down to money. It's not going to come down to term. It's going to come down to whether or not John Tavares looks at this organization and sees a chance to seriously contend for a Stanley Cup. Not this year.
No.
He doesn't, I don't think he or anyone else has any illusion that this team could even, you know, do anything at the trade deadline that would put them in that position. Yeah. He's looking at it, you know, long term, can I win a Stanley Cup here? And that, to what you just said, Ryan, that's exactly the approach that I think you have to take, and you have to say, look, yes, you can win a Stanley Cup here because we have all of these things that you just talked about.
And I think the single biggest change that's helped the Islanders in their pitch this year is the development of Matt Barzal. Knowing that you have that 1-2 punch, and Barzal now, by number two center standards, he looks like an elite number two center.
Yeah.
And knowing that, I think, really helps the chances of Tavares staying. I still think he's going to stay. I mean, I think in such a saturated sports market, he has a little bit of anonymity but still lives in an exciting place. And, I mean, he's talked openly about being so excited that they won the Belmont Park Arena project. That, I think the completion date is projected at 2020. So 2021 season would be the first season. If he signs an 8-year deal, he only has to play 2 more years, and then 6 years of the contract get to be played in the new building. Next year, they're going back to Nassau Coliseum for 12 games. All good selling points. At the same time, I still wonder if there's a way to sort of hedge your bets. And if you're going to make a trade at the deadline, what if you target a goaltender who is under contract beyond this year, so not a pure rental? So maybe it is a Peter Mrazek, someone you can place a little bit of a bet in that.
But he is not under contract after this.
He's under team control.
Yeah, what I mean is team control. I'm sorry. Let's say you
try Mrazek, who's been really hot, 941 save percentage in the last month. And suddenly you catch lightning in a bottle, and then you catch the lightning.
Hey,
we already did that joke a couple weeks ago.
Then
you're helping your case now, and then maybe you're actually improving your situation for later. Mm-hmm. And we know the Islanders have some phenomenal goaltending prospects in the system as well. Mm. So I don't know. I wonder if that's sort of a way to get the best of all worlds. Not that I necessarily think Garth Snow is going to do it. But I don't know. I think if I were him, I would consider that, because if you can get in, it still shows Tavares that you care, that you think you can bet on this team and maybe they can pull an upset. I don't know. I'd be doing everything I could to make sure he stays. Going to the Atlantic Division, Saturday's game between the Bruins and Leafs was a big game because obviously in Toronto, everyone's talking about the Leafs often, and the Leafs got very hot. They brought in Travis Dermott into the lineup. They took Roman Polak out of the lineup. Suddenly they're looking a lot more dangerous. Kasperi Kapanen, they've got their speed back. Everyone's talking up the Leafs. They're looking like a powerhouse again, and then boom, they run into Boston. Auston Matthews has the worst possession game of his career, facing Patrice Bergeron. And it kind of highlighted not just that the Leafs aren't necessarily ready, but also I feel like people are overlooking the Boston Bruins, who when was the last time they lost a game in regulation? Was it
September? They lost to Anaheim three games ago, but okay, they went like 18 in a row without losing in regulation. Yeah. They lost one, and then they got right back on the horse and they've won their last two. Yeah.
So is it time to talk about them as not just a threat to Tampa Bay, but a Stanley Cup contender? Because I feel like they're not mentioned in the same breath of Vegas, even Winnipeg this year, Nashville, Tampa Bay. People are going to bet on Pittsburgh to make a surprise run now that they're getting hot again. But what about Boston?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, they're 5 points back of Tampa with two games in hand. And the way they're playing, you got to assume they're going to win those two games or at least get 3 points out of those two games. So that puts them right there. I mean, they've got the best line in hockey. They've got perhaps the best player in the game right now, right here, right now, or one of the best. I mean, that they're right there and they are winning every game. Their goaltending, Tuukka Rask has come around. You know, Zdeno Chara seems to have found the fountain of youth again.
His name is Charlie McAvoy.
Absolutely. I think this team has to be seriously considered as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender at the moment.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the way they're built, and like they can play that heavy playoff hockey, and they still have guys from that Stanley Cup championship team a couple of years ago, so they have the experience, they know how to do it, and they have the depth. Tuukka Rask is playing the best hockey he's ever played.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was thinking about this on the weekend, like, you know, we've had that Hart Trophy discussion before. It's like, Kucherov, McKinnon, but it's like, what about Patrice Bergeron?
Yeah.
Like,
he's been the best player in the league the last month.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people are a lot more awakened now to what responsible two-way play means in this league. And it just feels like with Bergeron, he has so many elements to his game. He's doing everything well. I mean, he just seems to be the epitome of what a Hart Trophy candidate should be these days.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's fair. And it's funny, I remember talking to Bergeron last year and just saying, you could score 80 points if you wanted to, right? you know you could. The offensive talent is there, and we see all the goals he's scoring right now.
Yeah.
I think Boston's the highest scoring team in the league since mid-December. So it's interesting seeing him flick the switch. It's a testament to his talent. He can be an amazing two-way player, but when he needs to score, he can do it. He can turn himself into an elite or borderline elite offensive weapon, which kind of makes sense because that's what he showed when he was a teenager coming into the NHL at 18 when he was playing in the World Juniors.
Yeah.
He showed that kind of ceiling.
Yeah.
So it's been an amazing story to watch. But what I'm wondering is, why isn't Boston taken as seriously by the public? And is it because they're not a deep team? Because we're always talking about that top defensive pair and that first line. And do you think their depth will be a problem when they're matching up against a team like Tampa Bay? And in that case, do they still need to consider pursuing, I know we've said it before on the podcast, but let's say a top six forward or a Mike Hoffman, something like that. Do you think that's what's missing? And if they get that, are they then a truly legit contender?
What's missing? Not at the moment.
Yeah, I mean they're basically unbeatable.
It's not missing at the moment. They don't lose.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I mean, so right now, no, I don't think that's missing at all. The thing about Boston is they have 19 games left on the road. Tampa only has 13 games left on the road.
Hmm.
And the Bruins have 8 of their next 10, I believe, on the road. But they're also 13-5-4 on the road. They're one of the best road teams in the NHL. So I'm not sure that's going to be a huge factor. But, you know, I mean, if you look at this team and you say, yeah, we really think, you know, and why wouldn't you?
Sure.
Why wouldn't you look at this team and go, hey, you know, I mean, we can do this. Like, they can win the Stanley Cup this year with that team.
Yes.
Or with one or two additions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then obviously you've got to think about going out and getting someone that's going to bolster that top six so that somebody in the top six moves down into the bottom six.
It's interesting because so far, at least in Don Sweeney's tenure, he hasn't made that type of trade. He's made the reverse type of trade, like sending Dougie Hamilton out. But unless you count like Lee Stempniak, he's not made that aggressive buyer David Poyle type trade, Jim Rutherford style. So I feel like I'll believe it when I see it. So I don't expect Boston to make a crazy move based on the GM's history.
Well, we talked about this last week, but their big acquisition over the summer was Paul Postma. That was it.
Yeah. And they're in a good place right now where, you know, they have a wave of prospects that are graduating and, you know, making smaller impacts at this point. But, you know, like Danton Heinen was, you know, a mid to late rounder that turned out to be a gem for them out of Denver in the NCAA. And then you still have, Jacob Forsbacka Carlson in Providence, and you know he can give you minutes in the NHL right now if he had to. You've got some, you have depth that it's not name depth per se, but okay. When you have so many guys up front of that veteran caliber and quality, you know, we haven't even mentioned David Krejci or David Backes yet. And Right. These are two, you know, very established NHLers who can give you some nice playoff hockey.
Well, David Backes is another guy who's found the fountain of youth again.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was terrific this weekend.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. Ryan Spooner's playing very well for them, you know, on Krejci's wing. So I think the thing that bodes well for the Bruins is that they have a lot of options right now.
Yeah. And with Forsbacka Carlson, I feel like people don't appreciate enough that the Bruins are going to have an NHLer who's JFK. That is amazing.
Oh, I know.
You're JFK. JFK
in Boston.
Love it. That's amazing. Yeah.
He just doesn't play in Dallas.
Yeah, that's right. Too soon? I think it's too soon.
Too soon?
Too soon?
Yeah.
I was two.
It's always two.
I was one.
It's always too soon. It's always too soon.
I feel like as a Kennedy, I'm allowed to make that.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. If you look at the scoring race right now, it's a double take stat. Number two behind Nikita Kucherov is Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel.
Phil freaking Kessel.
It blows me away. Should we start considering Phil Kessel for a major award like the Hart Trophy if he's going to have a shot to win the Art Ross? Or is he a guy who's forever going to be the product of the superstar talent that's playing around him in Pittsburgh? What do you think of Phil Kessel these days?
Superstar talent that's playing around him? He's playing on a line with Riley Shane and Jake Gensel.
And who's he matching up against?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. Is that why he doesn't get the respect? And should we be treating him more like a legit MVP candidate right now? Like, what if he wins the scoring title?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's even the MVP of his team.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you asked in the before if he's underrated. I don't think he's the most underrated player on his own team.
Who is?
I think Evgeny Malkin is. Without question.
Well, I mean, according to the NHL,
without question.
Yeah.
This guy's a superstar. Mm-hmm. What? Close. He might be a superstar.
Who, Malkin?
Yeah.
Wait. Are we in the year 2007?
Yeah.
Like, I think Malkin's just pretty established as a superstar. You don't have to say might be. I mean, it's Malkin. He's all
okay. Okay. Yeah. But the guy might win the Roger Richard Trophy this year.
Yeah. And he's missed a handful of games.
No. I think the thing with Kessel, and you know, you framed it as the underrated kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he is, because we've kind of expected so little of him because of what he produced when he was overrated. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think Phil Kessel is one of the most underrated passers in the NHL.
Yes.
For a guy who can score, this guy has ridiculous distribution skills. Like, ridiculous. He's an off-the-charts passer. Mm. I just think that, to me, we've kind of settled into not expecting as much from him because of what he delivered before. So he was overrated. Now he's gone back to underrated.
Right.
And I think maybe it's a bit skewed that way. I think there's a lot of players, like, you know, to me, a guy like Anton Strahlman, he might be the most underrated player in the NHL. Blake Wheeler.
That's my
guy. Blake Wheeler's another guy. Yeah. You know, Tyson Barrie's hugely underrated, mm-hmm. in my opinion. You know, guys like that, I don't think you can put Phil Kessel in the underrated category.
Yeah, I mean, he's very good at what he does, but he is, you can't escape the fact that he's playing on a team with two of the best centers of their generation,
right?
And two of the best centers in the world. And yeah, you get into matchups, and I think basically he's doing the best that is available to him, and if he wins the Rocket Richard, then that's the trophy he should win. Mm-hmm. And again, going back to Patrice Bergeron, I think we have maybe a little more of a nuanced look at what a Hart Trophy winner should be these days. And, you know, not to say Phil Kessel is like a black hole or anything like that when it comes to other aspects of the game, but we know what his bread and butter are. And for him to get recognized, I think it's on those sort of like numeric trophies. Right.
It'd be one of those Corey Perry MVPs if it was like that. Like 20 years later, you're going, wow,
Phil Kessel won
that.
Yeah.
Holy cow. To me, Phil Kessel is doing exactly in Pittsburgh what I thought he was going to do.
Right.
He's doing exactly what I thought he was going to do. He's shining, and he's shining because he doesn't have to be the guy.
Right.
And he's You know, and I mean, to a lesser extent, he's not as good as Mike Modano, but like a Mike Modano kind of situation where Mike Modano just could not be the number one guy. And then when they brought in all those veterans into Dallas, the Joe Nieuwendyks, the, you know, all those guys, the Mike Keynes and all those guys to play around him, that's when he ended up being, you know, the player that we saw, right? Mm. So I think to me, like Phil Kessel is, he's not surprising me with what he's doing in Pittsburgh. Like, not even a little bit. And but you have to realize, too, that he was never going to do that in Toronto. He was never going to do that with the Leafs because he was miscast with the Leafs from the time he got here, in my opinion.
Interesting. And I can't prove this, but I feel like Phil Kessel will always be underrated because of his physicality. And I'll quote my best friend, good guy, Adam. He said, Phil Kessel looks like his name should be Toby. And I'm like, you know what? He really does. He looks like a guidance counselor. And I feel like there's an underlying bias people have when they look at him. Because they think of Phil Kessel as cute and cuddly. There was that video that went viral last week of him. Was he in the ice tub?
Yeah. He's Is that cute and cuddly? Is his hair standing all different?
Because he doesn't take himself too seriously. Yeah, yeah. He's adorable. He's this little teddy bear guy. And I think if Phil Kessel was chiseled, if he was built like Chris Letang, people would regard him with more respect. That's my theory.
But if he was chiseled and built like Chris Letang, he might be like ahead by 25 points in the scoring race right now.
Maybe. I mean, he's already fast and strong though, right? Yeah, people don't think the average fan would probably not think of Kessel as fast or having really strong wrists.
He's huge. His wrists are ridiculously strong. But I can't remember who it was. Somebody in Toronto, when I did a piece on him, said they watched him in the weight room and they watched him do like wrist exercises, and it was off the charts.
Yeah, that's why he can shoot the puck so hard.
Yeah.
The guy who might, if it weren't for an injury, be right there with Kessel in the scoring race, who started to slip, is Nathan MacKinnon. Out 2 to 4 weeks, it might be a shoulder injury. We know it's upper body. Colorado is right on that playoff bubble right now. Do you think this is the death knell for this season, considering how competitive it is in the Central? Or can they stay afloat until MacKinnon comes back?
Well, yeah, I think they can. I don't think it's a death knell. 2 to 4 weeks. Somebody was saying he's skated today, so we're probably looking at more to the two than the four. And I think all they have to do is hang in there, you know, and they just have to sort of stick around. And then, you know, once he gets back, I mean, because I think when you're looking at Colorado, I mean, I think a lot of people were talking about at one point in the season, talking about Nathan MacKinnon being the MVP of this of the league because he's had such a profound effect on that team. Mm-hmm. And you're going by the sort of precise definition of MVP, and that is the most valuable to your team. So you take that away and obviously they're going to be diminished, but you know, I mean, they have good goaltending. Their defense core has really kind of rounded into form. I think they've got some, you know, they've got some fairly balanced scoring. So like I say, I think as long as they can just kind of win two, lose one kind of thing and hang in there, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I think that it could have gone either way, even with MacKinnon in the lineup, because things are so tightly packed. And, you know, if you drop a couple of games and somebody else wins three, then all of a sudden, you know, you're three teams down from where you should be. But this is where Colorado's depth is really going to get tested. And I was talking to Eric Johnson the other week, and he was saying, you know, obviously that MacKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen line has been, you know, their huge line. But the Blake Como line's been pretty excellent as well, you know? And that's a sentence we haven't uttered that often in the past.
Sorry, Blake Como.
But credit where credit is due, Blake Como having a huge year and really coming through for the Avs. And I think when you're getting performances that you didn't expect, like Alexander Kerfoot coming into the league as a rookie out of the NCAA and having a huge effect, Carl Soderberg having a huge bounce back year, when you're getting those types of performances, then you never want to lose a guy like MacKinnon. But at least you can point to these other players and say, like, okay, well, we know that they can step up. So as long as we get that from them in the interim, then we should be okay.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I have sort of a devil's advocate opinion. I'm wondering if whatever happens, that this is good news for the Avs, because I don't think it'd be the worst thing for them to miss the playoffs. No matter what happens, this season's already a success. I mean, literally, they have more points than last year.
Right.
And I think everyone will view what Jared Bednar did this year as excellent. Joe Sakic, the Matt Duchene trade was a coup. So I think they're playing with house money right now. You know that Colorado's not going to win the Stanley Cup. I don't think they would make it out of the Central if they have to play, let's say, Winnipeg or Nashville in the first round.
No.
And then if you don't make the playoffs, you're still in the draft lottery. Maybe if they struggle and let's say they lose five or six games without McKinnon, maybe Joe Sakic starts to think, okay, maybe I should consider being a seller at the deadline. You trade a guy like Blake Como for whatever, a fourth-round pick or something. I don't know. I feel like it could help the team in the long run to miss.
You love breaking
crazy
things down.
Yeah, I know.
You love doing that.
You're not crazy, Matt, but you're not crazy. But I think that, you know, I always think that winning's better than losing.
Yeah. So you think, getting the experience.
Let's put it that way. I think that winning's better than losing. And even if you make the playoffs and you get your lunch handed to you by Nashville, which I think we all would expect would happen. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, crazier things have happened. I think to have gone through that experience is a lot better than missing and trading Blake Como for a fourth rounder. Yeah. I just think that you know, the Samuel Girards and the Alex Kerfoots and these young guys, they get in because the playoffs, you guys know this, and everybody listening knows this, the playoffs are a completely different beast.
Right.
And you have to have experienced it to be able to overcome it. And that's why so many teams that you see, these good young teams, almost without fail, they rocket up the standings, they got this great team, and then they flop out in the playoffs their first year, and everyone goes, holy crap. And it's just because they don't get that experience. I think getting that playoff experience would far, far outweigh any sort of, you know, futures that they could get for some of these guys that they're going to trade off.
Not only that, but even if you miss the playoffs by a point or two, the fact that you're playing competitive games right up until the very end, sends them, A, you get those good crunch time experiences, but B, it also sends a message from Team Brass that, like, hey, we believe in you boys, we like what you've done.
Yep.
And again, you know, like, talking to Jared Bednar last week, he was saying this year has been so much easier to implement his systems because he has more of a relationship with the players. Mm-hmm. And I got the sense talking to some of the Avs players that there were a lot of passengers last year. You know, somebody pointed out there's several guys that aren't even in the NHL anymore.
Right.
And they didn't retire. They're just in Europe or, you know, in the AHL or the KHL. So now you're building something positive there. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to keep those vibes going. And again, you go into next year and a guy like Girard is, as Ken loves to hear, he'll be a year older. True. He'll be a year older.
Yeah. And so will you.
Yeah, I will. I've been watching Dark on Netflix. That might not be true.
Great show.
But he'll have a year more of experience under his belt, and that should help in the long run. And guys like Rantanen are the same. So that's my thought.
Maybe you guys won me over, and it reminded me of a conversation I had with Patrick Laine at the awards last year, and it's when you said a whole different type of hockey, and Laine was like, I want to get to the playoffs, and he said, I know I've experienced it in Finland, and even in Finland the playoffs were so different, and I want to get that experience. And he said, look at what Nashville did as the bottom seed last year. So maybe you guys are right. Maybe the missing the playoffs is better for a team like Chicago, where like the Blackhawks don't need the experience. The Blackhawks need the picks. They need to reload.
They need the rest.
Yeah, so maybe it doesn't apply to a team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
exactly. That's right.
Yeah.
Let's go to some reader questions. This is from Astern51. And Astern says, do you think there is a chance the Rangers trade Henrik Lundqvist this offseason if they are truly going into a rebuild? I'll start here because I should quote what Lundqvist said recently. I think it was last week, right? When he said he wants to stay with the Rangers so badly that he'd be willing to be part of a rebuild. So do you think that closes the door on a Lundqvist trade automatically, or do you think it's still something that Jeff Gorton could explore? Because of the fact that even if a guy has a no-movement clause, if you tell a guy, kind of nudge him, like, we kind of want to trade you, it's sort of telling him you don't want him, right?
Right.
So what do you think?
I think it's going to stay status quo with Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, he'd be one of those guys that you'd look at in another team's uniform and you'd go, this just doesn't, there's not.
That's weird. Like,
yeah, that's weird. That's too weird. I can't get my head around it, you know. But, and not to make a sweeping statement about people from one country, but you look at the Sedins.
The Sedins, right? Matt Sundin.
The Sedins, they're faced with pretty much the same thing, except they're not at the level that Henrik still is at in his career. But they're at that crossroads, and they are saying, no, we're staying in Vancouver.
and we're going to live with a rebuild. We're either playing here or we're not playing anywhere. You know, Matt Sundin was the same thing in Toronto. You know, I mean, I don't know what it is about they have Swedish guys, they don't seem to get caught up in all of that hype of going somewhere to try and win a cup. And I just think Henrik Lundqvist is one of those guys who's a Ranger for life, whose number is going to be hiked up to the MSG banner or rafters, 10 minutes after he retires. Right. And I just can't see him going anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, he's structured it as such. He has a no-move clause. And I know what you're saying, guys can waive them. But I just wrote a blog about Carey Price in Montreal, and I was talking to Price at the All-Star game, and he just signed that huge 8-year contract extension that kicks in this summer, and he's happy in Montreal. He believes in the franchise, and I think Lundqvist is exactly the same, where he wants to be there. He's very aware of where New York is right now, and that's where he wants to be.
Right. It's tough, too, because you just look at it on paper. I mean, I think you guys are right, and it's going to stay that way. But it would be so helpful, not just to Lundqvist for, a chance to win a cup, but also for the Rangers' rebuild, that they could lose, the $8.5 million. But also, the Rangers have some great goaltending prospects on the way, like Igor Shesterkin,
right? Yeah, now he won't be ready until, 2020, because right. He's got one of those crazy KHL contracts.
And by then, if Lundqvist is still on the team, he wouldn't have trade value, I'm sure, by then, because he'll be so much older. But if you could clear a path and start and almost, maybe you don't want to have that replacement for Lundqvist. You want to tank for a bit if you're truly committing to a rebuild, and maybe you trade Ryan McDonagh and you could start doing it right. But I guess it's the blessing and curse of having a Hall of Famer on your team. It's like you have to be, you don't want to also diss him by shoving him out the door, leave a bad taste in his mouth, the fan base's mouth. So yeah. I think you guys are right. He's probably going to be there as long as he wants to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more question. This is from Tom Zoltowski. And Tom says, what do you think the Red Wings will do with Peter Mrazek and the Jimmy Howard situation? Will Peter be dealt at the deadline?
I mean, it's tricky because, as you pointed out, he's playing so well right now. They've been fielding offers for Mrazek for, a good amount of time now. And, I mean, it's so hard to find that number one goalie that really can be consistent. And I think if you're the Red Wings, you got to look at your time frame and say, when do we expect to be competitive? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be next year.
Yeah.
Year after? Maybe the year after.
Maybe.
Depending on what kind of pick they get this summer. Is it going to be a game changer like Rasmus Dahlin? I mean, that's certainly the way the lottery is weighted right now, it's certainly possible.
Yep.
Doesn't matter where Detroit finishes. And I mean, he's only an RFA, he's not that old, but I mean, he's been up and down for him. So I think they really have to do a lot of thinking on this one. I mean, maybe you try to sign him to some sort of short-term deal that gives you the flexibility to trade him, as soon as next year, if it looks like, he's not going to be your long-term guy, but you think you can get some assets in a deal for him. It's a pretty tricky situation.
It really is.
It doesn't make sense to me to commit the kind of money that they've committed and terms that they've committed to the Justin Abdelkaders and Darren Helms of the world, and then Peter Mrazek's where you stick your stake in the ground.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What I know of Ken Holland, I don't think that he's going to be trading Peter Mrazek at the deadline.
Interesting.
I really don't. Mm. I think that, I mean, I don't even know if he's going to trade Mike Green at the deadline.
Really?
Because the sense I get is that if people think they're getting Mike Green for nothing, he's not going to trade him.
Right, yeah, on principle.
I think he's, on principle. Because right. that sets a precedent. And then you're sliding down a slippery slope there. I think that the impression I get is that Ken Holland is looking at the return that St. Louis got for Kevin Shattenkirk and that they themselves got for Brendan Smith.
Right.
So Kevin Shattenkirk was, in effect, a first and a second. There were other guys involved.
Right.
So it was a first and a second, and Smith was a second and a third. So that's what that's what they're looking at. Mm-hmm. If you want to offer a third rounder and a B-level prospect, It's not going to happen. Right. So he's going to want to hit a home run with Mike Green, and he's certainly going to want to hit a bigger home run with Peter Mrazek, given that Mrazek's rights are still controlled by whatever team owns them.
Right.
And so, this doesn't... We've all seen Ken Holland operate for a long time. This just doesn't seem to be the way Ken Holland would operate.
It's a really good point, because I think in Green's situation, as a right shot puck mover, he's going to get so many good offers that there will be one good enough to accept.
I think it will happen. Yeah.
But with Mrazek, I think you're right, because there's never as big of a market for goaltending, and you might get some low ball offers, so maybe he doesn't get a good enough offer to accept. And it's still a tricky situation, because to me, Peter Mrazek reminds me a bit of Jake Allen, where you know the talent is there, but the consistency is never there. His career is a roller coaster. Every time he gets hot, he goes in a big slump again. So to me, you have to wonder if Mrazek is finally hot right now again. Is it a chip that you want to cash out before it tanks again? Mm-hmm. And do you want to, I mean, I think you're right, Ryan. You don't want to sign him to anything long-term in the summer. So if you commit to him, it's got to be short-term, because what if you sign him to something that's multi-year, he could go cold again and then he burns you and you're stuck with him again. So it's not an enviable situation.
It's not, but it could be, because if you do get Mrazek under a shorter-term deal, like a bridge deal of 2 years, let's say time for 2 years. Well, then Jimmy Howard's UFA after next year. So you're starting to clear up that situation a little more.
Right.
And you've got a little more clarity. You give Peter Mrazek his 2-year deal, and maybe he's got it. Maybe he's figured it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that out in the next 6 months or the first 6 months of next season, right?
Right. And maybe Abdelkader comes off the books in 2036, and if hockey still exists by then, if people aren't in flying cars, who knows? Well, tune in next week to find out more about the stretch run, and I'm sure we'll be talking more trade, everybody. Thanks for listening.